Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening up a book that, well, it's been massively polarizing, hasn't it? But also incredibly influential, Timothy Ferris's The 4-Hour Workweek.
Oh, definitely. It really represents a seismic shift in thinking. The book's whole mission, fundamentally, is to challenge what Ferris calls the deferred life plan.
That idea that you work like crazy for 40 years.
Exactly. You know, the 9-to-5 grind, maybe 9-to-9 for some.
Yeah.
Save up everything. And then only when you hit 65 or whatever, then you get to enjoy life.
And I think that's why it hits such a nerve, particularly now. So many of us feel this time poverty.
Mm-hmm.
We feel trapped, right? Trading our best hours, our best years for money, often to fund a lifestyle we don't even have the time to properly enjoy.
And this book just throws that out. It says, look, there's another way, a way to get maximum freedom, maximum output, but with minimum input, minimum time wasted.
It completely flips the script on success. It's not about hoarding cash for one big retirement way down the line.
No, it asks, how can you strategically build mini retirements into your life right now, starting today or as soon as possible?
So to really get this radical approach, we should probably touch on the author himself, Timothy Ferris. He's kind of the poster child for lifestyle design.
He really is.
Yeah.
And his credibility, it doesn't come from academia or theory. It comes straight from, well, from the trenches, as they say.
Right. He started that sports nutrition company, Brain Quicken.
That's one.
Yeah.
And yeah, he achieved what looked like success from the outside making money. But the sources are clear. He was working insane hours, like 80-hour weeks.
Totally burnt out.
Completely. Financially okay, maybe, but time poor. And that miserable experience became the catalyst, the foundation for his whole system.
So he used himself as the test case.
Exactly. His own first guinea pig. He documented everything, the exact scripts he used, the processes, how he hired virtual assistants, how he streamlined his supply chain, all aimed at getting the business to run almost without him.
Which then gave him this incredible freedom. I mean, the stories are pretty famous, right? Traveling the world, learning languages.
Becoming a world champion tango dancer. All while the business kept ticking over, generating income more or less passively. He really walks the talk, sharing the specific hacks that give you, you know, disproportionate results.
And those results, those hacks, they all feed into his core idea, the new rich lifestyle. And this isn't about being mega wealthy in the traditional sense.
Not at all. That's the key shift. The book is a tactical guide, sure, but the philosophy underpinning it redefines wealth. For the new rich, the real currencies are time and mobility, freedom.
Not just the absolute amount of money in the bank.
Right. He's talking to anyone feeling overworked, employees, entrepreneurs, even students questioning the standard path. And the metric isn't just your total salary, your absolute income.
It's relative income.
Precisely. How much you earn divided by the time it takes you to earn it. Think about it. Someone pulling in $50 AK working just 10 hours a week
is way richer by this definition
than a CEO making $500 but chained to their desk for 80 hours. That's the fundamental mental leap you have to make. It's huge.
It really is. And to actually do it, to make that leap practical, Ferris lays out this four-step framework, the acronym, DEAL.
DEAL is the roadmap, basically, from being swamped and stuck to achieving that location independence. So D is for definition, setting your own rules.
Okay. E is elimination.
Radical time management, cutting the fat. Then A for automation, building those systems, the passive income streams.
And finally, L for liberation, getting that physical freedom, the mobility.
Let's unpack that first bit then, the D and E, starting with D for definition. This is all about dismantling those limiting beliefs we all carry around.
Like the idea that the timing has to be perfect before you make a change.
Exactly. He basically says, someday is a disease. Waiting for the right time or waiting for permission, it'll never happen. Which leads straight into one of his most powerful tools, fear setting.
Ah, yes, fear setting. This is fascinating. It's not just positive thinking. It's a practical pessimism.
Kind of. It's a structured exercise. You sit down and you define in really granular detail the absolute worst case scenario if you take that leap, quit the job, start the thing, whatever it is.
What's the worst that could really happen?
Then, crucially, you brainstorm ways to prevent each part of that worst case scenario.
Yeah.
And then you detail exactly how you'd repair the damage if, despite your best efforts, it actually happened.
And the effect is, well, it kind of defangs the fear, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. It takes this vague, paralyzing anxiety and turns it into concrete, solvable problems. And
yeah.
Nine times out of ten, you realize the potential downside is actually quite limited, often temporary, and usually reversible.
While the potential upside is life-changing.
Right. And this works alongside dreamlining, which is where you get super specific about the actual cost of your dream lifestyle, not some vague, I want to be rich idea.
Like, what does that trip actually cost per month? What does that class cost?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And often, the real number needed for freedom in those mini retirements is way, way lower than people assume.
Okay, so you've defined the new reality, faced the fear. Now comes E for elimination. This is about effectiveness over efficiency.
Right.
Absolutely critical. Doing the right things, not just doing things well. And the core principle here is the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule.
The classic idea that 80% of your results come from only 20% of your efforts.
Or inputs, or clients, or tasks.
Yeah.
And the tough part is you have to ruthlessly identify that critical 20% and then be willing to cut, delegate, or simply ignore the other 80%. The noise.
Even if that 80% feels busy and important.
Especially then. And to make sure you power through that vital 20% quickly, he brings in Parkinson's Law.
Ah, the idea that work expands to fill the time allotted.
Precisely. Give yourself a week for a two-hour task, and somehow it'll take the whole week. It just swells in perceived complexity.
So the hack is aggressive deadlines. Force the focus.
Short, sharp deadlines. And you protect that focus with what he calls the low information diet.
Cutting out the junk food for the mind?
Pretty much. Most news, endless social media scrolling, random web surfing. He argues it's mostly irrelevant noise. It eats time and mental energy without actually helping you achieve your goals. Practice selective ignorance.
And he gives practical tools for this too, like task batching.
Yeah, grouping similar, often low-value tasks together, like checking email. Don't do it constantly, reactively. Batch it. Do it once or twice a day, scheduled, same for calls, admin, whatever.
Break the constant interruption cycle. Get chunks of focus time back.
Okay, so we've defined, we've eliminated the fluff. Now we're on to A for automation. This is about buying back your time, often using geo-arbitrage.
Geo-arbitrage sounds fancy, but it's basically leveraging cost differences globally.
That's the core of it. Earning income based on, say, U.S. or European market rates, but paying for services or assistance in countries where the cost of living, and therefore service costs, are significantly lower.
Often through outsourcing, using virtual assistants or VAs.
Right. Hiring people, often to places like India or the Philippines, to handle tasks, research, scheduling, customer service, personal admin, anything that doesn't require them to be physically present.
Now, it's worth saying, this isn't always push-button simple, is it? The implementation requires effort.
Oh, definitely. You, the listener, should know it takes work up front. You need really clear systems, detailed training guides, good communication protocols, especially across time zones. Quality control is key. It's not set and forget from day one. It needs solid management initially.
But once you do get that system running, it frees up your time. And that freed up time is then invested in building the muse.
The muse. That's his term for the automated income stream. And he has strict criteria for what qualifies.
It needs to be a niche product, right? Something you can sell online.
Preferably something that doesn't need a ton of ongoing management or customer support. Ideally, automated fulfillment, think drop shipping or using a third-party logistics company.
So it's designed from the ground up to generate that relative income, not just become another demanding job.
Exactly. And crucially, before you pour loads of time and money into developing this muse, you micro-test it.
Validate the idea first, cheaply and quickly.
Yeah. Don't spend months building the perfect product in a vacuum. Put up a simple website, basic landing page, spend maybe $100 on targeted Google ads, see if real people click, and more importantly, if they try to buy.
Get actual market feedback before committing serious resources. Smart.
Very. So that brings us to the final letter, L for liberation. Breaking the physical chains, literally.
For people in traditional jobs, this often starts with negotiating remote work.
And Ferris provides actual scripts and strategies for this. The key is framing it as a win for the employer. You propose a trial period, focus on proving increased productivity while working remotely.
Make it a no-brainer for them based on results, not just a personal perk for you.
Exactly. And once you have that mobility, whether you're an employee or entrepreneur, you can embrace the mini retirement.
Those extended breaks, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months scattered throughout your working life, instead of waiting decades for the big one.
And again, geo-arbitrage often makes this feasible. You might be earning dollars or euros, But you spend a few months living comfortably and cheaply in Thailand or Portugal or Colombia, where your money goes much further.
But he does include a warning here, doesn't he, about what happens after you achieve this freedom?
Yes, the danger of the void. What do you actually do with all this free time once you've successfully automated or eliminated most of your work?
Purpose can vanish if you're not careful.
Right. He stresses that the goal isn't just idleness or endless vacation. It's about using that newfound freedom for meaningful pursuits. Learning languages, mastering skills, contributing through service, having real adventures, filling the void proactively.
That makes sense. Okay, let's maybe zoom out a bit and talk about the big overarching themes or messages here, the core philosophical shifts.
I think the first, and maybe the most fundamental, is that redefining wealth we talked about. You have to internalize that time and mobility are the primary currencies.
More valuable than just a big salary number, it's about relative income. Valuing your free time more than just the next dollar earned.
Mm-hmm. And second, that relentless focus on effectiveness over efficiency. The 80-20 rule isn't just a nice-to-have productivity trick. It's foundational.
You have to stop being efficient at tasks that don't actually move the needle towards your real goals, which requires brutal honesty sometimes.
It really does. Then the third theme for me is the psychological power of fear setting.
Right. We talked about it as a tool, but it's more than that. It's about changing your relationship with fear and risk.
It positions fear not as a stop sign, but potentially as a compass. Often the thing you fear most is exactly the thing you need to do for growth. It shows the biggest barrier usually isn't logistical. It's that vague, paralyzing anxiety.
Yeah, that really resonates. And the book is packed with these kinds of punchy, memorable lines that capture the philosophy. Maybe we should touch on a few key quotes or ideas.
Good idea. The one that sums up the whole premise is probably, the new rich, NR, are those who abandon the deferred life plan and create luxury lifestyles in the present using the currency of the new rich, time and mobility.
That's the thesis statement right there.
Pretty much. And then there's the one that challenges our whole cult of busyness. Being busy is a form of laziness, lazy thinking, and indiscriminate action.
Oof. That one stings a bit, doesn't it? It suggests being constantly overwhelmed isn't a badge of honor, it's a failure of strategy.
It implies you haven't done the hard thinking to decide what not to do, what to ignore.
And connecting back to fear, what we fear doing most is usually what we most need to do, using fear as that guidepost.
Yeah. And maybe one more, the practical productivity engine, Parkinson's Law. A task will swell in complexity in relation to the time allotted. That's the reminder to keep those deadlines tight.
Okay, so bringing this down to earth for you, the listener, how can someone start applying these ideas now without, you know, quitting their job tomorrow? What are some immediate low-risk steps?
Well, personally, I'd say start with the low-information diet and task batching, like today. Turn off distracting notifications. Check email twice a day max. That alone can free up huge mental space.
It breaks that constant reactive state. And professionally, maybe do a quick 80-20 analysis.
Absolutely. Look at your tasks, your projects, maybe even your clients if that applies. What's the 20% generating 80% of the positive results? And just as importantly, what's the 20% causing 80% of the stress or problems?
And then make a conscious decision to focus on the first and actively minimize, delegate, or even eliminate the second.
For big decisions looming, use the fear setting exercise. It costs nothing. Just sit down, write it out. It brings incredible clarity to the actual risks versus the perceived risks.
And for anyone with an entrepreneurial itch, remember the microtesting.
Yes. Don't hide away building something for months. Test the core idea with a tiny budget first. Use a simple landing page, maybe some targeted ads. See if people bite before you invest heavily. Validate demand.
So, thinking about the whole book, this whole deep dive, what's one thing that really stands out or maybe surprised you?
For me, it's probably the sheer systematic nature of it all. The idea that this kind of radical freedom isn't just luck or privilege, but potentially a solvable equation.
Mm-hmm.
If you apply the steps, if you manage the inputs, definition, elimination, automation, the output, liberation becomes achievable. It makes it feel less like a dream and more like an engineering problem.
That's a great way to put it. I think what surprised me or maybe struck me most forcefully was the emphasis on confronting the void. It's easy to get excited about cutting work and automating income. But the warning that you must consciously design what you'll do with that freedom, finding purpose beyond just not working, that feels like the deeper, more complex challenge. Freedom isn't the end goal. It's the platform for meaningful engagement.
Well said. And maybe that's the final takeaway for everyone listening. This book's power lies in showing that life doesn't have to just follow the standard script.
The deferred happiness plan isn't the only option.
Exactly. And perhaps the biggest risk isn't trying something new and having it not work out perfectly, but the risk of inaction. The cost of staying stuck in a comfortable rut, waiting for a future enjoyment that might never quite materialize the way you hope.
Food for thought, definitely. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.